In a post-privacy world, how will consumers protect themselves and their data? Or should we even be trying to lock down our data after all? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with two authors of recent books that address our post-privacy society. We also discuss the new technologies that will not only change our economy, but alter how we navigate our daily lives. The conversation with those thought leaders starts next.
Hi, and welcome to Techonomics. We are pondering the future with two Silicon Valley thought leaders this week. We have two authors, thought leaders, Silicon Valley two-inch headlines, basically, to help us unpack and prepare for the pivoting economy and how to make all our new daily lifestyle technology work for us, not just the corporations. Kevin Kelly's latest book is titled The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. Andreas Weigand's new book is Data for the People: How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. In this segment, we're under the hood on what exactly the post-privacy world means for all of us. Are we in a post-privacy world already?
Yes, we are in a post-privacy economy, and it's important to think about it as an economy or as an ecosystem, because the tree to bark up on of saying they should not collect the data is too late, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. So assume, and that's the premise of the book, assume that everything is collected by your friends, by corporations, maybe even by yourself. Now, how can you get empowered by those data?
Right.
So what tools should you ask corporations to give you that help you create value for yourself, not only for the corporation, for yourself from the data that you create?
And I think the answer, or I think the framing for that answer is like how, and I agree with Andreas, we can't stop the collection of it.
That horse has left the barn.
Long ago, and it's going to go in that direction. And so the question we have is, how do we civilize this? How do we domesticate this? How do we make this force into something that's a positive force for society? And so we do have a choice about that. And for me, one of the recognitions, one of the literacies about data is to understand that there is a direct coupling between the amount of transparency or the loss of privacy and personalization. So if we want to be treated as an individual, as a person, which I certainly do, I want my friends to treat me as an individual. I want companies to treat me as an individual. I want the government to treat me as an individual. I need to reveal myself to them. So in order to maximize personalization, I have to maximize transparency. I should have a choice and deciding that, no, I want to maximize obscurity. I want to maximize my hiddenness. But that price will be that I'm treated like a number. I'm treated like a generic bulk organism. Okay. So I'm not treated personal. I'm treated in general. So the little slider is coupled, and the paradox, so to speak, is that in order to be treated as an individual and to maximize personalization, I have to maximize my transparency.
Did you have something?
Yes, I want people to recognize that they need to set the value of that slider.
Right.
That they need to recognize that it is a paradox that is not going away. We can also say that there's a paradox between privacy and convenience. That sure, if you know I do not want any data about me stored, then I have every single time to enter everything at detail. But people need to be empowered to set that value so that it serves them. And that means they first need to understand what actually would they like to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And an important message from the book is that I want people to realize when they have inconsistencies, when they want the cake to keep, but they also want to eat it.
Right.
That they realize that can't both be happening. They need to be empowered to make that decision.
But gentlemen, you both are very measured and reasoned and well-founded in all of these arguments. But we've touched on one thing. Andreas, you just said something about security versus convenience. If you take that a step further, it's security versus confidentiality or privacy, right? So we always have to sacrifice a bit of our privacy to feel more secure. At least that's what our politicians tell us. So that is where the fear, I think, comes in. The amorphous blob that both of you, I think, are addressing in your books, trying to help us prep for what's coming in this new economy. This new society that we're going to have to deal with. What are you seeing? I mean, both of you are on the circuit. Both of you teach, I believe, and lecture, and I've watched both of them. What are you hearing back from your audience as far as the fear factor goes? Because you talked about this slider, and that's a great analogy, and Kevin's used it before. But what are you hearing back from the audience?
It's been surprising. When we use technology to give people the ability to slide that slider in any direction, the surprise has been that people are pushing it almost all the way to the maximum personalization and maximum transparency.
You seeing any age disparities there with that?
No.
Okay. Total opt-in seems to be the option.
It seems to be the option. And that's been a surprise because we did not expect that. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that about ourselves. But we should have, because here's the interesting thing. If you look at our humanoids in an evolutionary sense, for hundreds of thousands of years, we've been evolving in clans in which there was total transparency. I mean, the 120 people in the clan knew everything about each other all the time. Mm. So we are actually comfortable evolutionarily with this kind of transparency. What we're uncomfortable with is the state that we have right now where that transparency feels asymmetrical. It feels like it's not mutual in the sense that, well, it's not just that I know everything about Andres and he knows about me. It's that they out there, some big entity,
right,
knows about me, but I know nothing about them. I have no access to. I can't control that information. I have maybe no direct benefit. That's where this feeling is coming from, is a little bit of a sense that there's not a good symmetry between that knowledge.
I see.
And I think that's where the uncomfort and the unrest is trying to say, is there some way that we can restore some of that symmetry? And I think part of what Andreas and I are talking about is, mm-hmm, we can only do that through what we demand and through becoming literate about this and understanding that it's not all going to be perfect. There are still paradoxes, but we can still demand certain tools that will allow and restore some of that symmetry so that we know who knows. We can watch the watchers, basically.
I see. And when you said asymmetrical, Andreas, you kind of lit up a little bit.
Absolutely. I don't want to be behind a one-way mirror. I want to be behind a window where I can also see into the corporation, where there is some transparency of understanding what they do with my data, how they arrive at decisions like personalization or decisions like pricing. So for me, it's very important to have data symmetry. Now, that doesn't mean that if I go to my doctor and I say, you know, I have a problem, he says, oh yes, me too. But what it means is that I want to see transparency. I have to be able to inspect the refineries.
Okay. Let's stay here for just a second because you mentioned a real-world application, doctor's office. Where can we see some opportunities for this kind of acceptance in the pop culture world that we're living in right now as we move forward? Is it medical? Is it a chatbot on Amazon who's going to help me get my stuff a little bit faster?
Medicine is an ideal place to look at this because right now in the world of high-tech medicine, there are certain devices like a pace setter in a heart where that information is being collected about someone's heart rate is actually not even accessible to them, to the person that is embedded in. And so that's an instance, that's kind of an extreme instance of that asymmetry where the person that has a pacemaker embedded in their heart can't get access to that data. We feel that that's really kind of not very symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a movement that, you know, patients should definitely have not just access to their data, but in some sense benefit from it. So if you have your genes sequenced and people are having value, some of that value should come back to you. Because, again, what I'm saying is everybody who partakes in that ecosystem of data should have both rights and responsibilities about that data and the value that's being created.
Can we drill into the Gattaca moment you just mentioned with the gene sequencing and whatnot? Give me another example of that, such as, let me see if I understand. If I have a proclivity to addiction in my gene sequencing, is that something that my health insurer should know about as well as me? And if I have a proclivity to live to 130 years old with perfect health and no addiction, should I also know that too? So my costs will come down? Is that a real world application or am I just science fiction?
No, that's a real world. But it's even more than that. Is if a company is able to develop a drug based on the fact that they use some of your genes, you might want to be able to share in some of that value. If that information is pooled faster by having other people who have the similar kind of things, and then that accelerates the development of the drug, then that comes back to you, and you benefit from the value, the fact that you shared it and other people shared it. So there is some value that comes back to you, because by sharing your information, you have accelerated the development of a drug that can actually apply to you. And so there are many ways in which this idea of partaking in the value and having it come back. It's not just a matter of knowing the information. It's more about getting the value from sharing the information.
Using that example, I remember opting into drug tests when I was in college to help me pay for my beer money every month. So that's kind of a similar slider thing. Andres, you had something to say there too, I think, with the real world application that I was struggling with.
Yeah, I always, as a physicist, like to do thought experiments. So assume that every child, the moment gets born, has its DNA sequenced. So that means every single interaction it has with the medical system will be recorded, and we can find patterns on the entire population of how drugs, for instance, interact with people who have certain genes. Now I think, as society, we need to think about the equation, the values we put down on that. Should discriminating based on your DNA in insurance be something which we want, so insurance companies can be more efficient, can price risk better? Or should we say this is something like a protected minority that we don't want? So what I love about the world we live in is it now has us take the conversation no longer in saying, gee, we don't know, to yes, we do know, but what do we want the world to be like?
That was part two of my in-studio discussion about the digital age and digital economy with Kevin Kelly and Andreas Wiegand. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.